welcome to the Ted Brower Show. This is your co-host today, Austin Brower. I am joined with my father, Ted Brower. Are you on the line with us?
I am, Austin. I'm having a good time today. I'm having a lot of fun talking to you and to Todd, and I've had a great time going through all of this research we're going to cover today on the air. And it's been a great holiday week. We've had a lot of fun, and I got you. Actually, you know, I love it when I get to talk to our customers and our friends, basically call into the office, and I get to pick up the phone. And it's been an adventure this week. So yeah, I am here, and we're ready to go. And I've got a bunch of stories to cover. You want to go first? Or you want me to?
Yeah, I'll cover one. I thought this was pretty interesting because it's pretty prevalent and relevant in our family's life. As you guys know that have listened to us a couple months ago, we had a family member, directly related. He was my, half-uncle. We went into detail about this, so I'm not going to go all over it again, but he basically died of a full-blown heroin overdose. When they did the autopsy, I think he had what was heroin, cocaine, and Quaaludes in his system. Is that correct?
I believe it was the Quaaludes. I'm not sure, but I know it had the heroin, and I know he had cocaine. And I found out from the guy doing the investigation that's called a speedball. They do the opium, but the opium or the heroin, but that makes you kind of real calm down and sleepy. So they push the cocaine in at the same time, and what it does, it kind of like hits the gas and the motor and the brake at the same time to keep your body alert and awake so you can function on the heroin. I guess that's what the guy called it who was doing the investigation at the scene of the death. The investigator that I spoke with, Austin. I also got the autopsy I read this past week, and it was a pretty gruesome autopsy.
Well, that's interesting. It's just confirming because, you know, we've discussed it, that we're starting to hear more and more about this. Total drug deaths now in 2014 have finally been released, and the drug overdose deaths have reached a record all-time high in 2014, largely by the abuse of narcotic painkillers and heroin. U.S. health officials reported on Friday, in 2014, more than 47,000 Americans died from drug overdose, which is a 14% increase over 2013, and they're expecting even higher numbers in 2015 once they're released. And it's interesting, it said more than 6 out of the 10 drug overdoses involved either prescription painkillers and or heroin. The opium epidemic is devastating American families and communities, and to curb these trends and save lives, we must help prevent addiction and provide support and treatment to those who suffer from opiate use disorders. And the problem is, what a lot of people don't understand is that people start getting hooked on these painkillers and this heroin. It's difficult stuff to get off of, and you really have to be making sure that if you are involved in that or you know somebody that is, you got to be giving them proper supplements, too, to keep their brain chemistry. We have the, what was the doctor's name out of Australia that we interviewed?
I don't remember, Austin, but it's on our archives, and he actually talked about how you have to actually sometimes give injections of B vitamins to people that are going through heroin and opiate withdrawal because it really lessens the symptoms of the withdrawal. Excellent show. If you have anybody suffering with that, go back in the archives and listen to this guy. He was phenomenal.
Yes, it was definitely a excellent show on that. And what brings me my next article, though, is that this just came out now with Russia's anti-drug chief, the head of Russia's federal anti-drug agency, Viktor Ivanov, reported now that the Afghan opium is being processed into extremely high-grade heroin in clandestine Turkish drug labs for distribution through all out the world. He basically went on to say that they reported that 600 kilos of opium were seized in a joint operation carried out by Russian and Afghan special anti-drug units in the city of Doshi in Afghan's province. And essentially what's happening now is Afghan is pushing this stuff over to Turkey, and Turkey is apparently breaking this stuff down now and processing it into essentially just full-blown raw heroin. They're not even cutting it. They have so much of it, and they're producing an incredibly high level of heroin, and it's just my opinion, but definitely could be the increase that we're starting to see over last year and this year as well in the heroin overdoses throughout the United States and throughout Europe, if this really is accurate.
You know, I went to a seminar several months ago, and it was on Operation Gladio, and I've talked about it, but since this hit the news again, I'm going to go ahead and we're going to talk about it again. And what was interesting is I really didn't know that much about this, as most people don't. But Paul Williams, the actual author of Operation Gladio, the unholy alliance between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia, did the book. It's got over 1,000 references in it. And we sat there, and I mean, I was riveted. I went to one seminar he did for like 3.5-4 hours. I was literally riveted to my seat when he was talking about Operation Gladio and what happened. And I'm going to cover it real quickly again because we're covering this. And for those of you who've heard this before, please forgive the redundancy, but a lot of I'm picking up new listeners every single day, and I want to share with you what's going on here. Back in the 40s, after World War II, there were a lot of sleeper cell German soldiers all over Europe. One of the generals came to America and worked out a deal with the CIA to run covert communist black flag operations called Operation Gladio in Europe to prevent the spreading of communism. Now think about this. Half of Europe had already been given over to communism after the treaty with World War II to the Soviets. They split it down the middle. But now the Soviets, they were afraid, were going to try to take everything. So we were told, again, this is more obfuscation, and they decided to run black flag operations all over Russia, not all over Russia, all over the Europe, and also Germany and also Italy. The first time I went to Europe in 1976 with my dad, 1977, there were guys walking around with attack dogs, police officers, military, with full-blown, full-auto M16s. You don't see that anymore over there. Now, what was interesting is they couldn't figure out how to fund this operation. So they went to Chiang Kai-shek, and they asked him, they said, how are you funding your own operation with all this million-man army you've got here in China? He goes, what we do is we produce opium, and we sell it to the peasants. And the peasants feed the army and keep us going as far as the money and the income and the munitions that we need. So what the CIA decided to do, they decided to start selling heroin to the black nightclubs in Harlem because they felt as though the black people really weren't worth saving. I mean, this is all documented. And what ended up happening is they started bringing this in from the Cambodian Triangle. Well, these countries in Southeast Asia started getting very upset about this. They wanted to stop. Hence, the Vietnam War started because of this. Then there was a large drought in Southeast Asia, and the opium production moved to Afghanistan. That's one of the reasons that Russia went in and did a 10-year war, and they're trying to clean that out. Well, Russia pretty much cleaned it out because the Taliban came in and did this. We went into Afghanistan, as far as I'm concerned, as far as Paul Williams is concerned, only to allow the reestablishment of the poppy fields and the production of heroin in Afghanistan. Number one commodity in the world is crude oil. Number two is natural gas. Number three is heroin. And we are one of the largest intakes of heroin through the CIA now, running it through the Air Force bases on the C-130 transport planes into the United States, be distributed by the mobs, primarily the Khazarian mobs and also some of the Italian mobs. And what's interesting about all of this is that the American population is being poisoned by all of these narcotics, which is funding the black ops of the operations of the CIA. This is what happened back in the 80s with Ollie North and Reagan, when they were running drugs to supply the Contras money. That operation, those black op operations, never stopped. If you read this book, I suggest you get it, Operation Gladio, the unholy alliance between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia. And you know, and what's crazy about this, you're absolutely on point on this, Austin. This is exactly what's happened. Turkish labs are being used now, running this into Europe, which is then running it back into the United States and also distributing it through Europe. This is a major, major mess. Because remember, these Khazarians, these Sabbatean Frankists, they wanted to do everything they possibly can to destroy the work of God. And one of the best ways to do that is get people hooked on prescription drugs and chemical dependency drugs like these, and also all of the antipsychotic drugs, like I think Xanax. What was that one? Was it Xanax? Which is the one he said was worse to get off of than heroin, Austin? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, benzodiazepines, which is, I think the brand name is Xanax.
Yeah, Xanax. And see, that could have been, but that Todd could have been on that too. You know, it may not have been a Quaalude, it could have been a Benny. And so the craziest thing about all of this is that people don't realize that this is going on right now. This is how corrupt the system is, the running of drugs. And see, in all of this, it was running of weapons, running of drugs. This entire system, this world system, is completely and totally under the run of these satanic people from the CIA. Remember, the CIA brought in witches and did seances and called up curses and all kinds of other crazy stuff back in the 70s and the 80s after they stopped their remote reviewing protocols. So all this information is available online. And so the CIA is one wicked, wicked, wicked Satan group. And a lot of the military now is being run by this. So it's a major problem that we have in the United States. And that's why we're getting this pure grade heroin in that's so pure these guys are ODing on it. Like, you know, Sharon's half brother, your half uncle, Todd. And, you know, it's sad because there's so many heroin deaths and drug overdose deaths now, Austin and Orlando, that it took almost 4 months to get the autopsy results. That long. Because they're that backordered, backlogged on autopsies of drug patients. In fact, it said that this was basically a overdose, that it was not going to be investigated as a criminal activity. They're not even trying to find out who sold him the drugs because he was an addict. And he'd been an addict for many, 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 many years. And I'm going to say this to you, please, if you're listening to me again. Number one, monitor who your children hang out with, even in church. Don't let them hang out with the kids that have the purple hair, the green hair, the pink hair, the mohawks, and the body piercings, and are covered in tats. Okay, now I'm not saying that all those kids are bad, but that's a really good indication those kids are heading in the wrong direction. And when you start bringing those kind of kids together with your children, the Bible says that bad company will corrupt good character. That's what you've got to avoid, is a bad company. I've seen it repeatedly in my own life, and what happened with our kids, what's happened with other people's children. You've got to make sure they have a good, clean group of friends. Bob Harrison, who's a dear friend of mine from like 25, 30 years ago, he told me one time, he was raising like 4 or 5 kids. He told me, he said, the most important thing I've learned, Ted, over all the years, is you have to make sure you monitor who your children hang out with and you maintain that monitoring for as long as you possibly can, and you find them high-quality friends. And sometimes that's hard to do. Sometimes it's not. But I'm telling you, I've seen a lot of good kids go really, really bad sideways because they start hanging out with people who drank alcohol, who took drugs, and invariably they start doing the same thing if they don't break that relationship off. And I know with teenagers, because guys, I've got teenagers too. I've got one daughter who we ended up sending to a church missionary program, you know, school out in Montana, because she started going sideways on us. She was 14 years old, almost 15, and I knew that I wasn't equipped to deal with this. And we loved her so much, we did what we needed to. If you have to send somebody through, and she wasn't on drugs at all, she never even used drugs, and she'd never had sex. But I want to make sure it stayed that way. But the problem is, her attitude had gone bad, and she was starting to hang out with the wrong people, at church no less. So don't allow yourself to say, I'm not going to provide my children what they need because I'm embarrassed. I'm not going to provide my children what they need because I can take care of it. Don't do that. We had friends come over last night, and they've got a son who's basically a pothead. Been a pothead for 3 years. So he was like 12 years old. He's almost 16 now. And I told him, I said, look, you've got 2 years left after the age of 18. They can check themselves out of any type of parochial school you put them into. You don't have a lot of time left. And chances are, the recidivism rate going back to these types of drugs is pretty doggone bad after this certain age. So don't wait. When you start seeing problems, become proactive. They start coming back home, you know, doing body piercings and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that all people get body piercings are messed up. I'm not saying that. Or people who have tattoos are messed up. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if you're getting tattoos and body piercings and you're 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, you know, somebody's signing off on all this stuff, and chances are they're not the kind of kids you want your kids to hang out with. And if that offends anybody, well, I'm not trying to be politically correct here. I'm being very honest with everybody. You've got to make sure you monitor who your kids hang out with. Monitor their grades. Make sure they make A's and B's. And if they make an occasional C, whatever. If they start making D's, help them with their homework. Spend time with them every day. Pray with them every day. Do what you need to. But again, this is bringing back to the attention of what happened with Todd, you know, 3 or 4 months ago when he died of the heroin overdose in Orlando on Heroin Highway. I mean, this is a major problem that has personally hit our family now. And Sharon's dad is basically waiting to die over there where he lives, because he's like 82 years old, because he's given up all hope pretty much, because his oldest son, his only son, is gone. And I told him the other day, I said, here's the deal. I said, you've got 4 grandkids and a great grandkid on the way. Let me go ahead and have you come over here. I'll send somebody over to pick you up and bring you here for Christmas, you and your wife. Didn't want to do it, because they're all having pity parties because the kid died, because nobody wants to believe their kid has this problem. But when that kid is 33, 34, 35, 36 years old, Austin, you can tell them, You don't have much of a chance of changing without a serious drug rehab program. It's a lot easier to monitor it and to prevent it to begin with.
Yeah, you're spot on with that. It's definitely easier to try and stop from the beginning, like you said, with your friends who, you know, the kid's 15, 16 years old now, and, you know, he's been smoking, you know, weed. And the issue isn't just that, you know, he got busted smoking pot once. Now you're starting to see most of the time when these kids are involved in it, the people they're hanging out with starts usually leading into more illegal activity, drinking, other drugs, drinking while intoxicated, or driving while intoxicated, then more illegal behavior, thievery, robbery, stuff like that. And then it usually always escalates because that type of behavior that young, there's no bounds on it. Once you break those limits and say, well, this is okay, well, that's okay, well, I guess that's okay too, there are no limits on anything anymore. And so with children that age, you really have to dip it in the bud immediately, or else then you see these kids. I mean, they're in and out of juvie. You know, when they're 17, 18 years old, they've been arrested 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. There's a reason why. Nobody sat them down and said, this is unacceptable behavior. We're going to have to change this immediately, or else you're going to go south. And another article I wanted to bring up relating to that, though, is it's funny how, you know, we obviously know there's a massive problem with over-medication, with prescriptions and opiates. They're extremely addictive. They should really only be used in extreme circumstances. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, which the CDC usually doesn't do anything with physicians on medications at all, they had been working the last couple months massively to curb the reduction of prescriptions of painkillers, specifically OxyContin, Vicodin, and Percocet. And they've had a massive amount of resistance from the drug manufacturers, from the industry-funded groups, and now public health officials. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention was on track to finalize new prescribing guidelines for opiate painkillers in January. The guidelines would be the strongest government effort yet to reverse the rise in deadly overdose ties to drugs as OxyContin, Vicodin, and Percocet. Now, this is extremely rare because the CDC rarely advises physicians on medications. However, the agency is in the middle of a long-standing fight over the use of these opiates, which are extremely aggressive as far as addictive properties, and they're right around $9 billion a year just in specific opiate medications. Now, the FDA has even come in and said, no, you can't restrict that as much. You're relying on low-quality evidence, and they've all filed formal complaints, and essentially now the CDC, what they were trying to do has been completely stopped. And so you got to understand, I would never say I don't want somebody that actually needs, you know, an OxyContin 80 milligram that's about to die from something to be, you know, held back from getting that. But when you got these guys that are going doctor shopping and they're hitting 4, 5, 6 clinics a day, getting a bottle of Percocet or Vicodin or OxyContin like that, and they end up getting, you know, 150, 200, you know, pills, they're either selling them or they're hooked on them. There's no legitimate reason you need that much opiates in your possession, period. So the fact that everybody's pushing against the CDC, which generally I don't agree with much of anything they do, but them trying to make more restrictive limitations on how easily accessible these drugs are, I don't see that being an issue. It's just interesting to me, though, how everybody's trying to prevent that from happening.
You know what's interesting to me about that, too, Austin? Let's look at it from a different perspective, okay? Let's take our glasses off for a second and think. Okay, we've got millions and millions of people now that are addicted to opiates, legally obtainable opiates, because of cancer surgery, because of heart surgery, because of injuries, because of bad prescriptions from doctors. And we basically are feeding them all of this stuff at a relatively inexpensive price through the prescription drug market. Why don't we do this? Since we have millions and millions and millions of people now that are addicted, why don't we go ahead and dry up the supply line of the legally obtainable opiates? Why don't we push more and more people back into the heroin market to increase the sales for the CIA? Why don't we do it that way? Let's take the backdoor approach and let's look at it from another perspective. Why would they do this? Why would they legally dry up a supply of a drug that's so addictive that people will do anything to get? When they end up having to do is go to the street. Maybe they're trying to push their heroin sales higher. Maybe they're trying to do all of these different things that we're not even thinking about, son, trying to get more and more and more people off of the prescription drugs and onto the street drugs.
That's a serious point. I didn't even think about that. But you're right, though, because the amount of opium that's coming in to the turkey in that article that I just mentioned now, they have a plethora of it on hand that they're processing. Maybe the CIA has such an overabundance of heroin now that they can't move. They may have a massive supply of, you know, basically just stored inventory. So that's a great idea to try and push people in that direction if you try and take away their legally obtained opiates. You're absolutely right.
Because if a person is legally addicted, I remember years ago I had back surgery. I've had one full-blown L4, L5 decompressive laminectomy when I was in my early 30s, about 27 years ago. About the time you were born, Austin. Actually, right before you were born. Actually, right after you were born. And what was interesting is that then I've had two more of those surgeries. They really weren't surgeries. They called them surgeries, but I never thought they were. Those are the injections where they bring you in there with an anesthesiologist, and they basically shoot the steroid up inside of your spine to reduce inflammation. Those were pretty weird having that done to you. I had two of those done. So what I had it before is when I had those last ones done, but this was about 8 years ago. The guy gave me some really, I guess they're called Dilaudid, which is like an opiate. They're very, very weak. And I remember he gave me those, and he was very hesitant to do it. And I remember I took them immediately, and the pain completely stopped. I mean, I was in it. Austin, you remember this. I couldn't even walk. I was excruciating pain. And I mean, I took this opium, this heroin is what it is. I mean, which is basically the laudanum, which is a morphine compound. That's the name of it, was like a morphine. But that's all what it's all from. It's all from opiates. And what happened is, I mean, I had no pain within 15 minutes. It was the craziest thing I've ever experienced. And then I took one or two of them. That was fine. Well, the next day I took one or two of them, and it didn't do much. I had to take a third one. Well, the next day I was looking for the pill first thing in the morning. And I thought to myself, okay, I don't like this. You know, why am I looking for the pill before I even see if I got any pain? This is ridiculous. And so I immediately came off of them because I realized how incredibly addictive they are because of what they do with dopamine in the brain. See, and this is what happens when you have these dopamine receptors like this, and this thing starts filling these receptor sites up. It's just a feel-good chemical is what it is. And this is why it's so important to avoid these things. This is what aspartame does, by the way, the artificial sweetener. You have aspartic acid receptors in the brain that also release dopamine. And when you ingest diet sodas into your body, it releases dopamine, and it's extremely addictive to some people. So the point is, it's not that you should never use these things, but you should never allow yourself to get addicted to these things unless it's like a last-ditch resort because you're in such excruciating pain. But again, if you're in so much pain that you're in a wheelchair and you can't move and the doctors now can't get the drug for you, you're going to the street, son. You're going to go find something. And that's what I believe they're trying to do. I think the CIA wants to sell more drugs. That's why they're trying to dry up the legal supply. That's my own opinion. I've got absolutely no proof about that. But considering that I've read the book Operation Gladio, and I've been to these lectures, and I've researched all of this stuff, that's some kind of sick thing that they would do. Personally, that's what I believe. Now, let's look at another. Yeah, here's another thing. This is Israeli finishes testing a new missile system built with $150 million of U.S. taxpayers' money. Okay? A new Israeli mid-range missile interceptor developed in cooperation with the U.S. has successfully passed its final trials and is expected to enter service next year. Israel's defense ministry has said this. A missile defense system called David's Sling is designed to intercept a wide range of targets from rocket artillery strikes to aircraft to low-flying ballistic missiles at ranges of between 100 and 200 kilometers. It is expected to fill the operation gap between Israel's short-range Iron Dome missile system and the aeroballistic interceptor, which are already in use. Okay, so I bet you guys didn't know that you just paid $150 million for Israel to have this system out of your money that was taken from your taxes. Now, you know, Israel's probably got over 100 nuclear weapons already. I mean, they're perched on that peninsula out there basically waiting to start nuking people. You know, they don't need our help. And, you know, I don't believe, I'm like Ron Paul is, and if this just makes you guys angry, oh well, this is how I feel. You know, the United States is in such debt. I listened to that blithering idiot Lindsey Williams today. And, you know, because he's out of the campaign now, which is good. I don't have to listen, look at him walking around with his purse anymore. But the craziest thing is this. Here's the deal. He's going off. You watch him on his website. You can watch on YouTube. He's talking about how he's made everybody known that we've got to be in there and we've got to be fighting these wars and we've got to have a strong defense and blah, 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 and we have to cut back on the debt and balance the budget. This is complete and total rhetoric. It's complete and total obfuscation. Let's talk about what's going on with the Federal Reserve Bank, that clandestine mess, and what they do. That's what we have to get rid of. The reason we have a debt is because of the Federal Reserve Bank, period. If it wasn't for those guys, we wouldn't even have a debt. And this is what Lindsey William and nobody else wants to talk about, and they say the same junk over and over and over again, Austin, because that's what the American population has been so imprinted on them that they don't want anybody to talk. When Ron Paul started talking about the Federal Reserve Banks, or Rand Paul talks about it, everybody's got to shut him up and tell him he's a kook. Okay, well, all right. Well, he's not a kook. He's telling you guys the truth. What's your next story, Austin?
Yeah, it's interesting. You definitely on with that. On the now, for the first time now, you know, we have heard repeatedly that on the front lines of the whole ISIS battle in Iraq now, there's always been the suspicion of the United States basically aiding ISIS. You know, we've talked about it repeatedly. Now, Iraqi fighters now are actually coming forward with videos saying that they're basically U.S. helicopters airdropping weapons to the militants. Many friends and relatives of those guys are witnessing the same thing and have same videos. We've discussed that a few times, that basically the U.S. is blatantly sending weapons and airdropping them to ISIS. Now, as an accident, this is an accident now, is what the U.S. is saying it was. The Iraqi military, which the U.S. had a coalition airstrike force on Friday, hit the Iraqi military as they were bombing, supposedly, the Islamic State militants in the country this year. Right now, so far, they're saying that one officer died and nine were injured, but the people that are actually in there that they've talked to, they're saying that about 25 soldiers were killed and 37 were injured, and a medic said there was at least 20 injured. So the numbers are all over the place, but it's funny how the U.S. is supposedly fighting with Iraq now against ISIS, accidentally has a full-blown airstrike that they happen to drop on Iraqi fighters instead of ISIS. So I don't know if that was an accident. I don't know if that was a very, very poor pilot, or if that was just a full-blown, hey, Iraqi groups are getting too harsh at pushing ISIS back. You need to go ahead and stop them for a little bit. I don't know. That's just my honest opinion. Seems like it's pretty odd with the technology we have now, with the F-35 Raptors, that we just accidentally have, you know, misguided airstrikes.
Well, you know, the whole thing is just lies. I mean, again, we don't need to be in foreign entanglements. Our founding fathers told us that. We have an ocean between us and these idiots. Okay, we don't need to be there. Okay, we don't need to be there at all. I mean, you know, America was the beacon on a hill. I mean, like Reagan said. I mean, we were the Norman Rockwell of the world back in the 40s and the 50s. I mean, we were the lamp. You know, and now we're not. Now we're kind of like the giant opium producer, I guess, that likes to enslave the masses to opiates and bomb people for doing nothing and kill children and women. I mean, gosh, what happened to our country? And, you know, I read an article this morning that Donald Trump is the last great hope for the United States. And, you know, I don't know about Donald Trump. I'm not going to tell you that, you know, he's going to fix anything. I don't believe he probably can if they start trying to kill him. But the truth of the matter is, at least he's talking the talk. At least he's not being politically correct. I mean, and I'm going to tell you straight up, if Hillary Clinton's on the ballot, I don't care who the Republican nominee is going to be. I mean, I don't even know if our votes even count anymore because of Diebold election machines and all the lies of the voting systems. But I don't think they can actually skew a vote that's going to be, you know, 20, 30 points in one direction like they did with, you know, back with Reagan back in the 80s. Of course, they wanted Reagan to come in, and they had him killed. They tried to have him killed within the first months of Bush could take over. When that didn't happen, Bush ran the White House for almost 12 years after that, you know, 8 years with Reagan. That's why George Bush put up such an anemic White House run, you know, against Bill Clinton, because he didn't really care. He didn't care. I mean, he's already been running the White House for 12 years because Reagan basically was an absentee president who liked to take naps. And, you know, it was ridiculous. And I like Reagan. Don't get me wrong. I like Ronald Reagan, but he wasn't the leader that we've made him out to be. He signed that gun legislation. He signed that vaccine legislation, Austin. I mean, the president that I like, you know, if you Republicans want to get all yak-yak on me, have fun with it, is John F. Kennedy. I mean, he signed Executive Order 11110 to get rid of the Federal Reserve, start printing silver certificates. And he also wanted to get us out of that Cambodian triangle mess out in Vietnam where all the drugs were being run. He wanted us out of that. I mean, he wanted us out of all that stuff. He wanted to get rid of the mob. He wanted to get rid of the CIA. He wanted to get rid of the Vatican interference with everything that was going on. He was trying to completely shut down Operation Gladio.
See, what happened to JFK, Austin, you don't really know about this because you don't, that you really on a, it's not a history thing that most people talk about. John F. Kennedy was a commander, captain of a PT boat in World War II. And he ended up getting his PT boat sunk. And he was on an island trapped with a bunch of men, I think for about a week or so. And he wrote a book that, you know, I think it was called Profiles in Courage, about what happened to him in this infested, you know, jungle situation on this island, you know, with the Japanese looking for him to try to kill him. And it changed him, Austin. It changed him. He literally had his road to Damascus experience. He literally had, you know, an epiphany. And he wasn't the same person the globalist thought. Now, he liked his girls. Now, don't get me wrong. He liked Marilyn Monroe. But, you know, I'll be honest with you guys. You know, if you're not really walking with Jesus, I mean, and Marilyn Monroe's hitting on you back in the 60s, you know, and you kind of got kind of a bad marriage and you're not really loving God very much and going to church, it'd be a pretty hard thing to just walk away from. So I'm not trying to justify what he did with Marilyn Monroe, but I do know one thing, and I've watched the videos and read the articles and read the books on this. When she was killed, he was furious. He did not order that hit on her. That, again, was the CIA doing an unsanctioned hit. So it's because of the information that she had. And a lot of people believe she was hit, Austin, if you read the research on it, because JFK talked to her about what was going on with Roswell in 1947 and this extraterrestrial stuff that we've got going on with these spaceships, and that she was made privy to that, and she had threatened to go public on this. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, because I don't know any kind of pillow talk between Marilyn Monroe and President Kennedy, but that's what the research shows that I read. Now, whether that's true or not, who in the world knows? I have absolutely no idea. It's like the other day when I was talking about the blood, the frequency of the blood. I was talking about the physicists over in Germany who had done the research on this. And I said, look, I haven't done the research. I haven't seen the studies on this. You know, I can't verify that this is accurate because I didn't see it done myself. But it sounds right to me, so I'm going to go ahead and give this information out. But I qualified it like that. See, that's what people need to understand, is there's a lot of stuff that has been hidden from us. I mean, look at this thing with the, you know, with the Saudis. We mentioned this the other day with the 17, 18 pages that are redacted from the 9/11 Commission report. We don't have the truth about 9/11. They redacted it. I mean, we don't even know what happened. It's all supposed to be because, and Alex Jones says very succinctly, it's because of the Saudi Arabia involvement. Remember, the Saudis still crucify people. They crucify people. They behead people. Okay, this is a barbaric regime. They got a, it's a feudal system. It's a kingship. I mean, basically, you're one of the royal family, the House of Saud, or you're not. And if you're not, if somebody doesn't like you, they just take you out back and apparently just knock your head off or crucify you. You know, if one of the magistrates that they've appointed tells them to do it. I mean, what a messed up country. And they're our allies, and they're one of the countries that we work with as far as human rights in the world. I mean, what kind of, where are we? See, again, the reason we're dealing with the Saudis is because of the petrodollar. We made a deal with the Saudis back in the 70s when we went to the petrodollar under Nixon. We left the gold standard, that everything would be traded in U.S. dollars, and the Saudis would hold the balance of most of their account balances in our New York banks through the Federal Reserve Rothschild cartel again. And so we placated to these guys and catered to these guys now for almost 50 years. The problem is that petrodollar is coming to a screech and halt. And if they ever let gold and silver loose and turn it, just let it go from the naked shorts they do with paper every day in these trades, totally illegal, they would be, gosh, gold would be 10,000 an ounce and silver would be 400 or 500 an ounce. That's where it would go to almost immediately. But they don't want it to do that because it would show the actual drop of the value of the dollar. But no, Austin, it's interesting when you start doing the actual research of what happened back in the 60s and in the 70s with Kennedy and all the rest of them. What's your next story?
Well, switching gears a little bit, you know, we've talked about it repeatedly with Chipotle's, and now there's not a doubt in my mind, in my opinion, that there's some type of sabotage or underlying motive on it. As you guys saw, a lot of you yesterday, Chipotle Grill hit a year low after the CDC announced investigating another outbreak of E. coli in one of their restaurant chains. I mean, so far it's been all across the West with Kansas, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Washington, Oregon, all over the place now. And it's interesting because even the owner, you know, the main owner of it, is they're doing everything they can, basically said, with their new food safety protocol that they've been implementing and they have started to implement goes above and beyond any type of rules or regulations as far as health concerns, and they have absolutely no idea how this is happening still. And quite frankly, could there be some type of, you know, poor food that has been circulating? Yes, it could. But you're talking about some really, really strong coincidences now. When you start talking about 6 and 7 food chains across the United States, not in a city, not in a county, not in a state, you know, and all across the country now are getting E. coli poisoning. This is rare. This is extremely rare. I've actually never seen something like this in my lifetime. I've seen close to it, but this is getting pretty crazy, and it's just ironic to me that Chipotle's has been one of the leading, I don't want to use the word fast food because they're not, but they're pretty close to it. You can get in and out pretty quickly as long as they're not packed. But they've been adamant about using non-GMO food, non-GMO corn, non-GMO, you know, grass-fed, non-hormone beef, chicken, even pork, which I don't eat, but they have that as well. And so these guys are really strict. They're strict about their food quality. They're strict about their handling. And now we're seeing repeated over and over and over again all kinds of different states with E. coli poisoning. It makes me believe either A, there's shills that are eating their food and then going in and saying that they've gotten it from Chipotle's when there's no actual real evidence it's from Chipotle, or somebody else is sabotaging. Again, that's just my opinion, but I've never seen something this coincidental before.
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, by the way, Austin and I don't go over these stories together before we do the show. He's in a different location. I mean, I'm at my home. He's back in the health master's office, you know, across town, and we don't have time to review notes 95% of the time anymore. We don't have time to do that. But he's absolutely right. I agree with Austin. I think that he's just absolutely just telling you guys what's happening. I think that the Chipotle was growing so fast. It was getting so much notoriety because they were posting on their windows, this is a non-GMO restaurant. And remember, the globalists don't own Chipotle's. It's privately held. And so what the problem is, Chipotle's is getting bigger and bigger and bigger because nobody wants to eat GMOs. Well, the Rothschild boys who own all of these other companies and all of these other chemicals and all of this GMO stuff, they're going, well, we don't want them to do this, so we're just going to go ahead. We own the newspapers. We own the radio. We own the, you know, the media, and what we say is news, do you understand? And that's what they're doing. They release it through the AP wire, they release it through the Reuters, and they make up these stories, in my opinion, this stuff's not real, it's my opinion, and they blow it out of proportion like this, Austin. Because, gosh, I mean, I've gone to all kinds of restaurants locally, and I've had a few times I've gotten, you know, kind of sick or didn't feel good about it. I didn't make national news. Well, you know, what's that one movie, The Shooter, when that senator's yep. sitting there and he goes, the truth is what I say it is, you know? And see, that's what they do. When you own the media and you own the microphone and you own the airwaves, you can do anything you want to do, say anything you want to say, whenever you want to say it. And who's going to argue with you, Austin? Nobody else has a microphone. This happened to me back in the 90s when Clinton deregulated the radio industry and they allowed little giants like Clear Channel to come in and buy up every single station in a market, and you could no longer get into that market if you weren't on one of their stations, and then they would issue an edict through their stations that basically they don't want alternative health people on their shows at all, and all of a sudden the market started closing one after another after another. I used to do 40 talk shows a week in the alternative in the mainstream media as far as the top 10 foods never to eat, how to lower blood pressure, cholesterol, triglycerides, blood sugar without the use of drugs, how to burn body fat, how to burn cellulite. I just talk about all that stuff all of the time. I mean, sometimes, gosh, I'd do up to 8 shows in one day. I'd be careful not to lose my voice. That's all gone. That all stopped by 1999. That had almost come to an end. Then back in about 2003, we had Daystar TV call me out of Dallas. I had several of the top TV ministries call me up, wanted me on their shows. And that ran its course for about 5 years. And that all stopped and came to a screech and halt. And I kind of went into a semi-retirement because I'm like 60 years old. And then 4 years ago, I told you guys that story. I woke up in the middle of the night after I had a dream when God actually spoke to me audibly in the dream. I wasn't awake. I was sleeping. It was in my dream. And what it told me to do was, he didn't say these words, but what he inferred was, you know, get your butt back to work and go do something. You know, you've got all this knowledge. You need to get moving again. So I did about 3 or 4 years ago. I cranked it back up again. And about 2 years ago, we got onto Coast to Coast. You know, the following week we were on with Hagman. So we've been doing all of this stuff and trying to help all these people now for the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years. And, you know, we've gotten some momentum back. We're actually starting to get some listeners and traffic again, because this is what I've been doing since I was in my 20s, for heaven's sakes. I've been in business for 35 years. It's been a long time. You know, and so that's what people need to understand. When I tell you that I've done these things, I'm not making this stuff up. When I tell you I've sat down and had dinner with President Bush and introduced Larry King, and I know Schwarzkopf, or I knew him, he's gone now, and Zig Ziglar, and Cole, I got pictures of all these guys on my wall, for heaven's sakes. I did this. I did all of this stuff, and that's why I'm telling you right now. I was in a semi-retirement mode. Had it not been for the Holy Spirit speaking to me through a dream, I would still be just chilling out. But now I've got a full-blown calling on my life, doing this stuff, telling you guys the truth, and a lot of you have just encouraged us, and thank you so much for that. You don't even know what your emails mean to us when you write us, and you contact us, and you call us, and you tell us how much you appreciate the fact that I've got Austin on with me, and that I'm on doing these shows, because this is not what I would be doing, to be honest with you guys. I'd be just doing the nutrition stuff. I'd be continuing to do that right now, but I kind of have to blend it all together, because you have to know why we're in the situation that we're in and why this world's got like this. Right now, another good story coming out of Germany. Germans are stocking up on weapons for self-defense. This is from the Gatestone Institute. Germans facing an influx of more than 1 million asylum seekers from Africa, Asia, and the Middle East are rushing to arm themselves. All across Germany, a country with some of the most stringent gun laws in Europe, demand is skyrocketing for non-lethal defense weapons like, you know, animal repellents. Germans are also applying for weapons permits in record numbers. The scramble to acquire weapons comes amid a migrant-driven surge in violent crimes, including rapes, robberies, and aggravated assaults. In cities and towns throughout Germany, German authorities, however, are going to great lengths to argue that the German citizenry's sudden interest in self-defense has nothing to do with the mass immigration into the country, despite ample evidence to the contrary. Unbelievable. So, yeah, but it's very difficult to get guns in Germany. I've had my relatives tell me that before. What's your next story, Oz?
Yeah, it's definitely a very difficult task over there. But no, I mean, those guys, I mean, there's a serious issue going on over there. And a Syrian refugee was interviewed on a Arabic television channel the other day, and I thought it was interesting. I watched part of the video, and he flat out said that his main goal when he left Syria was not escaping any type of war zone. He was not in one, nor any type of ISIS persecution. But his primary goal was to Islamicize Europe by converting its citizens to Islam. He even stated, "My main goal for leaving Syria is to lead people to the acceptance of Islam." And so, I mean, it's interesting. We've discussed before, and so I'm not going to get into it in detail. Again, you guys already know pretty much our standpoint on it, is that a lot of these guys that have migrated to Germany and Europe and all this, as we said before, these are not your normal, you know, American Muslims that integrate into society and usually have some type of contributing factor. These guys want to completely and fundamentally change Europe. They do not want there to be a remnant of European society left after they have been there long enough. They want to implement Sharia law and bring in their own form of law, their own form of rules, their own religion, and make everybody forced to require basically to follow those laws, or you basically die. That's essentially the same thing they do in Saudi and all the Middle Eastern countries. So I thought it was interesting that this actually made news about this guy, and his main goal for coming to Europe had nothing to do with coming there for a new place or a new homeland or to avoid persecution.
Well, no, there's parts of the Middle East over there. If you go over there and you start trying to proselytize people to come to Jesus Christ and start witnessing to people, they'll kill you. They'll kill you. And the Muslims will kill you. The Jews will put you in jail. I mean, I just gotta love that. I mean, so the Jews put you in jail and the Muslims kill you. And you're like, gosh, really? I mean, but what about all this tolerance that we get taught all the time? And what about all the tolerance for all of this stuff? Well, it's okay. They're intolerant, but we're white people. We're 5% of the population of the planet, I guess. Now we're the smallest minority, pretty much. We've turned into the minority. But because we're white people, we're not allowed to believe what we believe and that it espouses our values on anybody, including Christianity. So we either get killed or they put us in prison. So it's kind of strange actually to me that this actually, this kind of thing has happened. But again, and I'm going to say it again, I'm going to be redundant again. The media is owned by the Sabbatain, Frankist, Kabbalist, Rothschild family. They own the AP Wire, they own the Reuters, and they tell you what the news is. So they're not going to report on stuff that they're doing wrong. They're only going to report on the stuff they want you to hear because they're going to control the narrative. The narrative has to be maintained to control the masses and to control the attention field on the planet, to control this hologram that we're in, and they want to keep it as negative as they possibly can, which we talked about that on Hagmann, and we're going to talk about that again on Thursday, Friday, and Sunday on this show over the Christmas break. Oh, by the way, again, we forgot to yesterday. We did it on the last break, when the song was playing. Healthmasters.com is our website. If you like what we're telling you, tell your friends to listen to the show. Support us. Support Health Masters. You know, this Health Masters brings you this show every day, 6 days a week. I mean, we're paying for this show. If you notice, there hasn't been a commercial every 6 or 7 minutes for 3 or 4 minutes. I don't like listening to shows like that. That's one of the biggest problems I have with GCN. I like a lot of the programming on GCN, but I can't stand their clock. I mean, every time you turn on, I mean, when I was hosting the Power Hour with Joyce, when I was co-hosting that show, I couldn't believe it. Every 3 or 4 minutes, another break, another break, another break, another break, drove me nuts. We don't do that. You know, we have the clock. We don't have any commercial breaks. So support healthmasters.com. Just get your multiple vitamins from us. You know, some guy called today and said how much he appreciated the show. And he put in a really nice order with us, and we just appreciate that. I mean, if you weren't doing that, we wouldn't be here. That's about the bottom line. And so a lot of you are buying your vitamins out of China, which they don't really care if they give you good vitamins or not. They'll just soon kill you. And so don't buy stuff like that. Get high quality supplements. If you're going to put something in your body, make sure you know what it is. Healthmasters.com, phone number is 1-800-726-1834. Enough of that. What's your next story, Austin?
Next one was interesting. I hadn't really heard much about it until I started doing a little bit of research about it. Apparently it was horrible. A lady apparently drove her car to a whole crowd of people out in Vegas. And it was pretty significant. One person died and 35 were either moderately or severely injured. But the weirdest part about it now is that the sheriff and the police department are refusing to reveal the overall motive behind the attack, where the lady deliberately plowed her car into dozens of people in Vegas. And he basically stated that, you know, the people are stating that the attack may have been racially motivated, but nobody's sure. And basically the police are saying they are uncomfortable about revealing the motive. But another crazy part is, according to one eyewitness account, although it can't be considered genuine because we don't know, from what somebody stated, is that the woman was screaming Allah Akbar out the window as she was running everybody over. And that's a lot of the jihadist thing they like to say when they're trying to kill people. I have no idea if that's accurate. I wasn't there. I didn't see her do this. I did not see her scream that. But I have to say it's pretty interesting that somebody would do that, and now the police are stating that they are uncomfortable about revealing the motive behind her attack, because apparently she told them.
You know, when an investigation is ongoing and they know it was her, they got her at the scene doing it, I think it's ridiculous that they can't give out her motive.
I mean, she admitted to it. She called 911 and told them what she did, and they went and picked her up at the hotel.
you got different levels of people on Prozac, I guess. I mean, you know, these nutbags. I mean, we haven't been to Vegas in years and years. I went there one time, and I watched years ago when we watched Phantom of the Opera, and the music was pretty good. The stage was pretty good. The acting and the singing wasn't very good. But the point was, you know, and I know, don't start on me that I watched Phantom of the Opera. Okay, I know that. I didn't realize how bad that was when I saw it. When I finally saw it, I said, well, I haven't done it since. You know, okay, I got that. I don't want a letter, please. I know. Okay. But the crazy stuff is, the thing that bothered me more than anything else is just the rampant prostitution and them giving you brochures while you're walking around with you and your family about whores. And I mean, I don't understand why in the world that can't be cleaned up in a city like that. But I don't know. That's why I don't have any interest in going back to Vegas again. Here's another one. Rand Paul introduces bill to kill Obama gun control. This is from Steve Watson.
the GOP presidential hopeful Rand Paul has introduced legislation intended to block any effort by the incumbent president to enforce gun control by executive action. Paul's legislation, named the Separation of Powers, Restoration, and Second Amendment Protection Act, would render any gun on gun legislation by the president, which circumvents Congress, as advisory only in nature. Paul's bill would apply to any executive action on gun control that either infringes upon constitutional authority or potentially violates the Second Amendment. The bill then mandates that once an executive action has been classified as advisory only, it would require Congress to pass it in order for it to take effect. The bill also outlines that it is within their power for a state official, member of Congress, or person affected by executive action on gun control to launch a civil lawsuit. The legislation will be fast-tracked through the Senate and is expected to be made a priority after the Christmas recess. Austin, the guns in this country are one of the primary reasons that we're not under complete and total tyranny already. Period. I mean, the reality is, if you're going to break into somebody's house and you know they're armed and they've got an AK-47 or 9mm or 45 or 40mm, I don't like the 40s. I like 9mm because of the magazine holds so much, and I like the 45
caliber.
40 caliber. I don't like 40.
40mm is a big round.
Thank you, Austin. I like the 9mm, and I like the 45s, but the 40 caliber, I don't care for that gun at all, because it doesn't hold a lot of rounds and doesn't have the knockdown power of the 45 with the right ammo, and it doesn't have near the amount of gun of magazine capacity of a 9mm. So, you know, but if somebody breaks into your house and you got a 12 gauge shotgun or a 9mm or 45 or a somebody may be lucky enough to have a 50 caliber Barrett laying by the bed. I mean, the chances are, if they know you have those guns there, they're not going to come in. Why would they possibly break into your house? A few years ago, we had one of our neighbors was all aggravated because, you know, we believe in guns, and we voted for, you know, the gun candidate. And I finally told him, I said, look, I said, I know you guys don't believe in guns. I said, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and put a big sign up in my front yard and say, we believe in guns here. We believe in gun control rights. We believe in, as far as having guns to control them properly, we believe in owning and maintaining guns and firearms, and you don't. So I'm going to put a big sign that says that this house has guns. This next house, they don't believe in having guns. You can check with them next. And I remember the neighbors went nuts. You better not put that sign up. And I said, well, yo, I said, you guys are ridiculous. I said, why would you want to tell people that you don't have guns? That's the reason. You don't want to tell them that you don't have guns because you don't want them breaking into your house. And sadly, Austin, people don't realize that. They continue to think that this gun control stuff is going to help them to have a safer place. It's not. People having guns that are law-abiding citizens, that's what protects everybody, Oz.
Oh, yeah, you're spot on. That's the main thing.
I think we got music going again, don't we?
Yeah, I heard it kick on. I was either going to do another story or sign out with everybody.
what's your next story? How quick can you do your next story?
Oh, it's fine. We'll close out.
Well, we love you guys. We appreciate you. Thanks for your support. Thanks for supporting healthmasters.com. Thanks for calling the office. Thanks for getting your supplements from us. And thanks for listening. Thank you so much for listening and being part of us and being part of our family. We appreciate you. God bless you guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon.
You guys have a blessed night.